You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Susan Giddings. We have another fantastic and exciting show for you here today. I want to go ahead and continue my tradition. Last week, we had Three Rivers. This week, we have the Federal Medical Center, Carville, Louisiana. Now, interesting place. Carville is no longer in operation, but it was an interesting assignment. Interesting enough, we shared it with people that had Hansen's disease. So it was the last leprosy colony on the Northern Hemisphere. That was a very interesting assignment to have a federal prison on one side and a Hansen's disease unit on the other. And we shared health services. Can you believe that? We had two HSAs, one of theirs, one of ours, but all the line physicians were public health service officials, and they were theirs. And so we had to kind of acclimate them to another crowd, if you will. Anyway, thanks for listening. Well, today, as promised, we have an exciting topic, and Dr. Giddings is going to go through that in grave detail. I know you want to hear it, but we get a lot of questions all the time. First of all, before we go into that, I'm sorry, Susan, somebody had a question for us on YouTube, so please address that first. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I'm going to take my glasses off so I can actually see it. Right. So last week we were talking about FSA versus SCA and how they really don't play well together. And we've kind of been muddling through, for lack of a better word. So we had a kind of a specific, more example, obviously 50 minutes was really a fast moving show to trying to get through all the things. But so we have from Han Solo 45, I assume a Star Wars fan. Good for you, because that's great. I like Star Wars. Said, okay, so when talking about home confinement specifically and SCA, let's see here. For example, if time can be applied to home confinement under the SCA due to lack of halfway house bed space, could it be coupled or stacked with home confinement under FSA? So if an inmate was recommended 8 months of halfway house by his unit team, but was denied by the RRC due to lack of bed space, why can't the case manager resubmit the request under SCA for home confinement instead? There seems to be an available solution that's easier, more cost effective. I wish it was easier. It would be more cost effective. So let's cut to the chase. Remember, home confinement under SCA is limited. It is restricted to 180 days or 10% of the sentence, whichever is less. So if the person had an 8-month sentence and there wasn't bed space available, but they had a verified home plan and we could get them out to home confinement, 10% or 180 days, which means right off the top of that 8 months, we ought to chop 2 months off, because max is 180 days. But in order to get the full 180 days, you have to have a sentence of more than 5 years. So now let's take somebody who's serving 36, 48 months. They are not, they are not getting that full 180 days because they default to that 10% of their sentence. So that's the one question. It would be awesome. And again, we said this last week, if we could wave our magic wands and have Congress lift that Second Chance Act, 10% restriction on home confinement, it would be easier, it would be cost effective, it would free up bed space for people who actually need that residential component, actually need a roof over their head and a bed to sleep on, because they don't have one. Talking about the stacking, they can already stack them. They can already, if an individual has FSA time toward halfway house, the unit team can also recommend SCA time. And 6 months ago, we saw that happening pretty regularly. Then the conditional calculator rolled out. We threw all those new people in there. The bed space issue became a hot mess. And now we're seeing folks getting their FSA conditional time and just a little bit of SCA time, just a little bit. But they can be stacked. And I think at some point down the road, when things start to level out, maybe we'll see more of that again. I just think right now and for at least through the end of this fiscal year, we are going to see very, very little of that. There was one other part in there I wanted to cover. Oh, how the referrals work. The RRMs, when a case manager submits that referral, and yes, it's for halfway house, but it's action for pre-release placement. They're making a recommendation for halfway house. If the person has a valid home plan, they're including that in that referral information, because what they have to include in that referral information is everything about the person, what their offense was, what their needs are. Do they have a home? Do they not have a home? What is going on? So if they're submitting a referral for someone to return to their spouse, to the home they were in prior to incarceration, home confinement is already on the table. It's just a matter of how much. And then going back to that 10% restriction, the case manager is submitting the referral based on that conditional release date that has the earned and the unearned credit.
The which release date, though?
The conditional release date includes the earned credit and the unearned credit. The FSA release date, when folks are looking at the public website and they see a date on there, that is the sentence, the good conduct time, and the earned FSA time. So that 10%, it's attached to the earned date. That's another problem with the law.
Right.
So I hope that answers your question. We will type up and put this response in the chat for everybody in case you're looking at this later or you don't get to hear us talking about it. We will put the answer in the chat.
Yes. And again, it just illustrates, you know, what you're saying, Susan, just illustrates how one thing doesn't necessarily work well with the other. They're separate constructs. Second Chance Act has been out a long time. This is nothing new. It's been out a long time. It's just now it's in the forefront because everybody is really trying to utilize everything they can, and rightfully so, everything that they can to get home early. We understand that. But at the same time, it's just, man, you know, it's just really prioritized. So, okay, well, good. Thank you for explaining that. And I think, folks, if you do go to the First Step Act YouTube channel, and you'll see Susan's response typed out. You can kind of, if you're reading it and you read it about 1,000 times, like I have to, like, oh yeah, that finally makes sense. So we appreciate your patience moving forward with this. So, okay. And now, drum roll, ba-la-la-la-la. You know, we get a lot of questions about, hey, should I go to residential drug abuse treatment? Should I go to RDAP or not? I mean, I know this guy and he got all this time off and he didn't have to go to RDAP, but yeah, he earned all this FSA time, yada, yada, yada. And why should I go to RDAP if it's just going to be a negligible difference on when, you know, how much time I get off? Cause you know, RDAP is quite a commitment, 9 months in the institution, going to classes, you have a 4-month commitment in the community because RDAP has an institution-based component, has a community-based component, which a lot of people forget about. You have to have that 4 months in our RC or in the community going to your weekly therapy sessions for aftercare. So we took a look at that, and Susan's taken a look at different sentencing ranges. Okay, now listen up, folks, different sentencing ranges, and then what that really translates to in reality of what you could get.
Right. So let's first talk about, because I'm a case manager at heart, if someone needs substance abuse treatment, then they need to do it, whether they're eligible for the time off or not. Bruce was in drug treatment, geez, your whole career. I was not in the drug treatment program unit as a case manager. I was sending people over there, and I will always tell you, whether you're eligible for the time off or not, take the program. Okay. But for the purpose of our discussion today, we are looking at what is that impact if the person is both eligible for home confinement, eligible for RDAP 3621E release benefit, and eligible for federal time credits, early release benefit. Okay, so what we did was we kind of just took some different scenarios. Now, Bruce usually publicizes the book, but I'm going to tell you, in chapter 6, we talk about the drug abuse program. And one of the important tables in the book is the table on, and you can't see this, but it is the table on the sentence length reduction. So for individuals, and I'm just going to read this so it'll be easier for me, with more than 37 months remaining to serve, you can earn up to the 12 months off. 31 to 36 months, it's 9 months. And less than 30 months, it is 6 months. This is important. What is also important to understand is because of the required minimum 120 days in halfway house, the Bureau applies the time, the 3621E release benefit first. So if you kind of flash back to when we've talked about time credits, and the whole idea of time credits, you're able to apply time credits up to the remaining amount of time served. So you can earn a whole bunch. You can earn a whole bunch. But if you get a sentence reduction or late in your incarceration, you drop down to low and you've already earned all these points, but you drop down to low, they dump a whole bunch of credit because now you can apply it and you're going to immediate release because you only had 9 months left. Okay. Yes, you had other credit there. But the way the law is written, it's only up to the time remaining to serve. What is this and how does this impact RDAP? So when someone comes into the system and they get their sentence computation and they get their good conduct time release date, that's the remaining amount of time to serve, right? You've walked in the door, they've calculated in your sentence, they've given you your jail credit, they front load because we do front load good conduct time. Had that question come up to this week again on the Facebook channel, there is no front loading of time credits, period. So they put all of that in there and they give you a good conduct time date, right? Now, what can we do with that date? Okay, so when we talk about someone who's just not doing RDAP, 60-month sentence, I always pick a 60-month sentence because the math is easy, okay? It's just is. On a 60-month sentence, a person will earn 9 months of good conduct time. Now, for the sake of discussion, the 60-month sentence, there's no jail credit, you're voluntarily surrendered, right? So we have no of the other extraneous stuff, all right? So on a 60-month sentence, you're earning 9 months of good conduct time. That drops that sentence from 60 minus 9, that brings you to 51. You already know you have to have 39 months remaining in order to earn a full 12 months off. Takes 27 months of time of incarceration to earn the 365 days. But in order to apply the 365 days, you have to have the 365 days. So therefore, it's 27 months plus 12 is 39. So we take our 51 months, which is our 60-month sentence, after we take the good conduct time off, we subtract 39 months, 12 earned, 27 served, we're left with 12 months. But at this time, you're already earning the 15 days, right? So it takes 2 months to earn 1 month off. You take that 12, divide it by 3, serve 8, earn 4. 12 months off, 4 months in halfway house, all on FSA. Now, that doesn't mean you won't get... We're not talking SCA at this point. We're just talking bare bones. You're going to serve 27 months plus 8 is 35 months. 1 year off your sentence, 4 months in halfway house. Technically, the 4 months is being served, but it's not in the institution. Okay?
But it might just be 9 months off the sentence sometimes or whatever, right?
I'm sorry, say again. The 9 months is the good conduct time.
Right.
We start at the top, 6 minus the 9 for the good conduct.
Okay. Right, on the full 60. Right.
Right. Yep. And I wish I had a whiteboard. We could draw this out.
I know. I have one. Anyway.
But now what happens when we throw in RDAP, right? RDAP, you come in 60 month sentence minus the 9 for good conduct time, you're left with 51 months, right? That's more than 37. We can earn the full 12 months off. So for the sake of math, we're going to say you've earned the whole 12 months. So at that point, we're taking 51 minus the 12 months for the 3621E RDAP. That brings us down to 39 months left. That's enough for us to earn a full 12 months off of FSA. Now, the beauty of that is that 27 months that we're serving is when we're getting taken the RDAP. That's when we also include our half rest time. For someone in that situation, they're getting a year for RDAP, a year for FSA, at least 4 months in a halfway house. They're going to have 27 months that they serve. At least four of them are going to be in halfway house or home confinement. The trick is at this point in time is, when do you get in to RDAP? How quickly do you get in? But you've got 23 months to work with. From the time you walk in the door, you've got 23 months to get over to psychology, get through the screening, and get into RDAP. So that's
get on the waiting list, yeah.
That's really good. Now, let's drop down to 48 months.
48 months.
48 months. Okay, we're only serving 48 months, so we're getting less good conduct time. 48 months, it's about 7.25 months of good conduct time, 7.2 months of good conduct time you're going to earn. So that brings you down to just under 41 months, right? Still have enough time to get that full 12 months off. Take that 12 months of RDAP. That brings us down to 28.8 months. What does that mean? That means we don't have enough time left to earn a full, to earn a full year in FSA. In fact, when we do the math, roughly, we can earn about 8.5 months of time credits. But that's okay because we're still getting a year in RDAP plus about 8.5 months of time credits. And we still have time for our 4 months of required halfway house. And in that case, you're looking at about 16 months in prison. Once we take this month time off, so you've got 16 months to get into RDAP and get it done. And we know RDAP is 9 months. So that leaves you about 7 months from when you walk in the door to get into a class. Now, what happens if you don't get in the class? Instead of getting into the class in the first 6 months, you don't get into the class until closer to month 10. Your FSA time is being reduced because they can't let you leave, release from incarceration, until you have at least that 4 months of halfway house, or you lose the whole 12 months from the 3621E. But again, right, you're still in better shape. You're still talking about like 20.5 months coming off of your sentence. Okay. Now, how we doing?
Wait, can I interject?
Sure thing. Because it's going to get more complicated.
I know. Just take a breath there. I know. Because you're
Yeah.
Don't we have a guy that, I forget what he's asking, but we say, look, by the time he gets out of RDAP, he has a projected graduation day here, and we hope that the case manager, et cetera, that he needs to go into the halfway house pretty much.
The next day. And a lot of, and let's be straight. A lot of our case managers that have been working, our case managers, they used to be my case managers. A lot of the case managers working in those RDAP programs have been in those programs for years. They're right, coordinating with the drug treatment specialists. Hey, right, is this guy on time to graduate? Like, when you go into the RDAP program, different sets of paperwork is done. Paperwork goes over to DSCC to check your eligibility.
The CTS office has to set up the aftercare immediately at the first. Yep.
There is all kinds of things, but they already know when you start, if you behave and you do everything you're supposed to do, you're going to graduate here. They do an estimated graduation date. And then that case manager is talking to that DTS in the institution. Hey, are we still on track to graduate? Yep, we're still on track to graduate. Those case managers are doing halfway house packets in full cohorts. So there is a lot of times where our folks are going right to halfway house. Now, the FTC is what really kind of creates the challenge, because it used to be case managers just had to look at the good conduct date and, okay, you're graduating in May, your release isn't until next May. Okay, this is where we're recommending 6 months. 6 months back, we're going to send you in November, you're going to do 6 months and release. Well, now we got to figure in that halfway house. So the way the conditional calculator works, the planning calculator, is as long as the person is in that FS RDAP conditionals time, where they haven't locked in the date because they haven't graduated and they don't have a halfway house date, the calculator is giving that case manager information about when they're going to hit that point, whether it's including FTCs toward halfway house or not. So the case manager now has that information. They didn't have that 6 months ago.
And that point is called what?
That is the maximum benefit date.
Okay.
And in the case of folks not earning enough to get halfway house federal time credits under halfway house, that is that FSA conditional release date. If you're getting more than 365, then your maximum benefit date is that conditional placement date. That is the maximum benefit date. We're very happy with that date, right? So with the expansion of the calculators between last year, now the case managers have even more information to work with. So they're able to submit that paperwork. So we have a lot of folks that if they have the time credits, they are leaving the next day or the next day after that. They're leaving very close. Now, if they're graduating June 15th, and maybe their maximum benefit date isn't until August 15th with halfway house, right? That's their conditional placement date. Well, the unit team may or may not recommend additional SCA time. 6 months a year ago, they probably would have. We had more bed space going on. Today, maybe, maybe not. But that's going to be each unit team are going to be working through that. But it still comes down to, yes, go ahead.
I was going to just interject this, and I want you to weave this in, but because the person is an RDAP graduate, they do get the 4 month RRC placement or community placement, whether that's in halfway house or home confinement, depending. So there's a situation here where maybe, you know, there are some people, and Susan's going to explain this. They may be serving a little bit more time, but they're out of the prison sooner because of the RDAP.
Right.
The 4 month thing. Yes.
So for the 40 plus years that the RDAP program has been in existence, folks got 6 months. In fact, when you and I were in the institution, DTS and case manager, you never put it. I mean, it was like 180 days. That was, you never put less. And the only time you would put less than 180 days is that dude with the shorter sentence, right? That was the person that we're like, okay, you're only going to get 150 days because, or 140 days because that's what you have left. And we were doing that transfer for the next day after graduation. Then as we started pushing folks out with time credits and the CARES Act, and we had all this stuff going on and halfway house space was being eaten up, it became routine for RDAP folks to be submitted for 120 days. There were still some out there. If you had the latitude, they might recommend, 120 to 180, knowing that the 120 was the statutory minimum. Because otherwise, they lose their 3621 benefit. They don't have the full. They'll actually reduce, in situations where maybe there was a sentence reduction or something else happened, they'll reduce that 12-month sentence to make that 12-month time off to make sure that you get that 120 days. So you might not get 12 months. You may get 10 months and 14 days. Because you have to have that 120 days. And that's what's really, that's important. That's what's driving this. And in today's climate, that guarantee of 120 days is not anything to bat an eye at. So, all right. You ready to take another one?
Sure.
Flip the page. Okay. 36 month sentence.
Three years. 36 months. Okay.
Right.
All right.
36 right. month sentence. Good conduct time is going to be less because you're serving less time. Good conduct time is about a little less than 4, 5.5 months. That's going to bring us down to about 30 and a half months. Well, at that point, we're under that threshold. We're in the 9 month range now. So the max we're going to be able to get on 3621E benefit is 9 months. So we're not right. even going to talk about the 12 months at this point, but 9 months is right. nothing to smirk at, right?
Right.
So 9 months off of that 30, that brings us down to 21 and a half months. With 21 and a half months, we're still going to be able to earn about 6 months of time credits, right?
Right.
6 months plus the nine, we're still talking about getting 15 months off of our incarceration. We still have time to get halfway house, our 4 months of halfway house. And all in all, you're looking at about 11 and a half months in the institution, 4 months in halfway house, rest of the time is off. But 11 wow. and a half months.
11 months on a 36 month. Mm.
But we also have to get into the program. Program is 9 months. Your margin for error.
You got to get in.
You're literally walking in the door, checking in, intake, see the case manager, go down to psychology.
Get on the interview, get on the wait list, and hopefully get on the next
one. And hopefully you get on the next one. Now, even if you're not in the next one, and again, you start eating into the your 9 months might come down to 8 or 7.5. And, you know, you're going to have to be playing with that, right? But your margin of error is really small. Take it down to 24 months. 24 months is 2 years. That is not a lot of time. We're talking about a little over 3.5 months of good conduct time.
And that's you getting in almost immediately. Let's just say that right now.
Oh, it's good. Yeah, absolutely. We're talking okay. week one.
Just saying.
But it's
possible. I mean, that's rare. But so folks, just listen to the math. But the reality
is this takes a whole lot of stars aligning. It takes a whole lot of stars aligning. So you're going to have a 24-month sentence. You're taking that 3.5, a little over 3.5 off, brings it down to about 20 and a half months. At 20 and a half months, you're only going to get 6 months off on 3621E, right? Take that 6 months off, brings us down to about 14 and a half months. With 14 and a half months, we're looking at about 3.5 months to serve. But if we do the math, what we find out is we don't have enough time to complete the 9 month program. They will take the days in order to, because we need 13 months. We need 9 months in the program, 4 months in halfway house.
Yep.
When we take that credit, we're down to like just under 11 months. So they're going to take that time from the FTCs. The net result is if you can do this, you're still getting the 6 months on RDAP. You're getting about 45 days of time credits. But, and here's the important part, you're getting the 4 months of halfway house. You're still getting out of the institution sooner. Even with only getting about 7.5 months off your sentence and 4 months in halfway house.
Okay.
Question.
Yes, thank you. On that 24 months, and this is, I should have asked you this before in our pre-production meeting. I'm so sorry. But If the inmate doesn't get in after month X, it's a wash. So what month is that?
Because
he's got to do, like you said, 9-4 is 13. So
So here's what I would say: if he's got to get into the program within about 45 days of walking in the door, probably less than that. And the reason is he's after we take the 6 months off, forget any time credits at this point, right? He's only going to get the 6 months. He's coming in at 14 and a half months, needs 13. Right. So if he can get into RDAP in that, or she can get into RDAP in that first month, they're right. still going to benefit. And that's because they're still getting 6 months off their sentence and 4 months in halfway house. Because if we flip to the other scenario and we talk about a 24-month sentence, forget RDAP, just do time credits.
Right.
We're actually only looking at about 6.5 months off your sentence, but the likelihood of any halfway house time at this point, maybe 60 days, 30 days, right. Maybe not at all. So what you're looking at is with RDAP, you're potentially looking at still having that 10 months not in the institution, six off your sentence, four in halfway house. Without the RDAP program, you're looking at maybe 5.5 months, maybe a month in halfway house if you're lucky. That's it. Question.
Thank you.
Now that we've confused everybody.
I don't want to interrupt you, man. So the guy that I brought up, right, we can work this backwards, y'all. Listen to this story. This is real stories from real consulting situations. So this guy now, he has all these questions about what his date is, but long story short, he's got to go in the halfway house the next day. He finishes RDAP, gets his 4 months, and boom, then he's out. So he doesn't have to worry about all this complex calculation. But that individual years ago, or I would say a couple of years ago, was at another institution, and I told him, hey, man, you've got to go down to psychology right now. Oh, I have time. No, you don't. And here's what happened. He did go down to psychology. He did get on the waiting list, and finally, he was transferred. He had to go on a program transfer where he sat in Atlanta. I mean, pick your holdover joint. There's nothing against Atlanta. It's fine. It's just holdover. Could have been Oklahoma City for this story. But I'm just saying, right, he sat there in transit. And so now, but because of that transit experience, it did kind of cut some of that. It cut some of his wiggle room or something. You know what I mean?
Oh,
now
absolutely.
He's just like barely able to get the maximum benefit. So what I'm telling folks is if you're not already designated at an RDAP institution and you think you have all this time on a 5-year run or a 4-year run, you don't. You need to go right down there, get on that waiting list, because they'll run that waiting list by release date, by projected release dates and whatnot. So you're, you know, but sometimes a program will have a spot and they'll send you over, you know, that you'll get a spot. We've seen that happen even at the DSCC level. We saw a guy go from the West Coast to somewhere in Minnesota or somewhere. I mean, remember that guy? That was crazy. Yeah. So anywho,
where the bed was.
Yeah. Cause that's where the bed was. So anyway, we just wanted to, or I want to implore you, or the clients, that when they are eligible for RDAP to get on that immediately, because the system has its own way of not necessarily acting as fast as it could. So.
Right. And it's all about, you know, it's about maximizing those credit opportunities. You know, the longer you wait into the sentence, we already know policy spells out how much time under 3621E that you're allowed, because the law says up to 12, and the Bureau administratively decided this is what we're going to look at. We know earned time credit figures into the projected release date. So when they're running their rosters and they're putting folks in date order, they're capturing the earned credit. Right now, they're not. It's not in policy, and it's something I don't know, but I'm reasonably certain that they've got to look at those conditional planning dates. And at some point in time, they're going to start looking at those planning dates as far as because they understand those time credits are there. And if they can be getting folks into the program, again, so that it coincides with, you know, in an ideal world, you finish the RDAP program and within a short period of time, weeks, you're transferring to halfway house and going into the community program. That's the ideal situation. So as, you know, as the agency becomes more comfortable and incorporates the conditional placement dates and conditional release dates into other planning for other programming, you're going to see this. And so, like, as Bruce said, like, you're just cutting your nose off to spite your face, and you're missing out on that opportunity.
Right.
If you want to be in programming and you need to be in programming, the sooner the better.
Because those are good classes to take. So suffice it to say, Susan, suffice it to say, sentences that are 12 months in a day, 14 months, those are just, you just got to do it and do it under FSA, and that's a wrap. Is that correct?
Right.
All right. So that, you know, and look, there's a lot of sentences out there that are the 12 month and a day, and it's quite a few 14 monthers we've seen here recently. And, you know, and those folks, it's just a lockstep First Step Act. Right. All the time is going to go toward the First Step Act off the sentence, and whatever they can get, you know,
now,
right?
Now let's throw a few wrinkles into the mix.
Okay.
Right. Let's say you're a violator.
Yes.
Supervised release to follow. All of the time you earn gets applied toward halfway house. So what does that mean? Well, we already know we have to do at least 4 months in halfway house, right? But because under the RDAP program, but because the release date isn't being adjusted by time credits, we're still opening up the opportunity. So you take someone with a 24-month sentence, and where's my notes here? That month and a half, 45, I mean, we've now got a smidge of room, right? Because we're not getting any time credits.
Now, is this a supervised release violator or somebody who got in trouble with a 200 series while in the halfway house?
No. So, okay. And when you get in trouble in the halfway house, because halfway house and home confinement are still part of your sentence.
Had
a question just in the last day or so and asked about, well, but when is, if I transfer, when's my time up? Your time is up when your sentence is over. Whether right. you're in an institution, in a halfway house, or in home confinement, you are still serving a federal sentence. So getting in trouble in the halfway house, in a tap room, getting in trouble in the halfway house or on home confinement, and if you have to come back in, that's not a violation. That's a program failure. If you gotcha. Physically release, you get to your FSA release date, you get to your good conduct time date, whatever it is, and you go out and you, we call it breaking custody, right? As we used to talk about, like it's like the old with the Cuban migrants yep. that we used to have at Carswell, yep. right? It's wet yep. feet, dry feet. It is a very hard line as to what that is, that breaking custody. When you walk out the door of the bureau and you're in probation custody.
Right.
That's anything after that is a violation, and you're coming back as a supervised release violator. It was typically forever and ever, you'd get supervised release violators back. They'd have no supervision to follow.
Correct.
What we see, and a lot of judges are realizing this, is because of the way the FSA is written, if you don't have a supervised release term, then you don't get time credits toward release. You get your time credits, but you can only use them toward halfway house. Right. And that kind of, that's an interesting thing. Early on, we used to see folks go back who didn't have a supervised release term, go back to the judge, and the judge would order 1 day so that they had supervised release. Right. You get the time credit. Kind of interesting, kind of a little bit of segue in Congress. The Safer Supervision Act, which was introduced in the last Congress. There's a Senate version and a House version. And it's actually kind of interesting because it's kind of expanding the terms for which a judge has latitude to not order supervision. Why? Because if you look at the research out there, the more supervision, the more layers a person has there, the more likely they are to trip up, whether it's a technical violation, you changed jobs and you didn't notify your probation officer, or you moved and you did this and you had one warning and now this is the second one. And now that you're done and you're coming back, you know, for low risk, low need offenders, they're wanting to give the judges the latitude to not order supervised release so that probation officers can focus their supervision efforts on the high-risk individuals who need more intensive supervision. And from a practical standpoint, from a criminal justice academic standpoint, it really makes sense. However, the FSA was written to only provide that early release as a transfer, not as an early release, but a transfer to supervised release. Again, I don't know what... we've talked about it. Like, what was their reason? Were they thinking, well, these people are coming out of prison earlier, so they should be supervised, or what the rationale was. It's not ancient.
Wasn't there the old wives' tale? I mean, don't shoot me. Please, this is just a wives' tale. It was it used to be this three buckets. First year is FSA goes off your sentence. The second bucket is up to whatever of RRC, and the third bucket may or may not.
There's no third bucket. There's never been a third bucket, and that's a problem. Let's talk about those individuals that come into the system and their pattern risk assessment is high, and they're doing programs. You know, there are certain things that move the pattern, programming, clear conduct, those kind of things. Getting older, crime is a young man's game. Get a little older, you slow down a little bit, you're less likely to commit crime. So those things all go in effect. So now you get someone who's serving 20, 30 years. They've earned in time credits. They were still high, but they've worked their way down. Or maybe they went to the warden and asked for an exception. We haven't talked about the exceptions on the show. Maybe he goes to the warden because he's done these good programs. He's been down for 20 years, but he was just hell on wheels for the first 30 years of his life, and his points aren't ever coming down.
Right.
But he goes to the warden. The warden signs off on an exception. But now we just got 700-800 days of time credits dumped into his record, and he's 11 months from release.
It's immediate release, right?
He's an immediate release. That's all there is to it. And those 700 days, after we take the 11 months and you release, they just evaporate into the ether.
And again, folks, if you hear of one of these unicorns where somebody did get the warden's exception, please let us know so we can understand the case and maybe interview the person after a while. Real quick, you talked about elderly, and are they still doing elderly RIS, or not RIS, but elderly dates on computation sheets that really don't have?
So the elderly offender home confinement program date still appears on sentence computations. As far as I know, they haven't like stripped it out yet. It was a pilot project. It ended in 2023. It was 23. I had to think about it. I was still working. When the pilot project ended, it will take congressional action to formalize it because it was only approved as a pilot. And like we talked about last week, the Bureau can only put people in the community halfway house or home confinement based on the congressional, the authority granted the agency. And right now, the only two avenues out there for the Bureau to put someone in the community is FSA and SCA. So yes, the information's still there, but it's just not a thing right now.
You know, but we get, hey, what about this date? And we have people call us like, oh man, is that thing on the, you know, is it, you know what I mean? It kind of teases people.
Absolutely.
Because it really, it's just psychological torture. I wish, you know, whatever. And so, right.
So I think it's something that Congress really should take up.
Yeah, they should. Absolutely.
It's something that should be taken up. You know, the reduction in sentence, the RIS, what we used to call compassionate release,
right,
does include elderly offenders, and not necessarily, you don't necessarily have to be terminal.
Right.
You know, back in the day when
right.
we were at Carswell, right. it was, you were like 6 months terminal. And that was it. So as they've expanded the access to a compassionate release, and under the First Step Act, if the Bureau either doesn't respond within 30 days on your initial request, or if you're denied and you appeal and 30 days lapses, that gives you the off-ramp to take it directly to the court. There are expansions within there, including elderly individuals, individuals that are just, they're not necessarily dying, but they look at what they call their daily living activities.
ADLs,
whether they have mobility issues, whether they have dementia or other issues. So there are avenues. They have expanded that. But they've expanded, and it's kind of an interesting expansion. I think it's kind of one of those teasers, like we've talked about, is the caregiver clause. I'm in prison and my elderly parent and I'm the caregiver. What they're looking at is, are you the sole caregiver?
Within 500 miles almost or whatever. Yeah.
You got anybody, like literally you are the only person in the world that this first family member has. Same thing with minor children. You know, your spouse passes away. Your spouse is incapacitated, but there has to be nobody else. If there's any other grandparents, aunts, uncles, anyone else. So even though it's there, it's extraordinarily difficult to raise to that level. Now, individuals with long-term chronic issues, elderly, they even break out elderly with health issues versus just being elderly under the reduction in sentence. Maybe we can talk about, just do a show on compassion.
You know, we probably need to do a show on compassion release, elderly procedures and stuff like that.
Yeah, because that's
not there, because you brought that in there as a line item, and it's there. People ask about it, and it may apply to them, and so... Yeah, we'll broach that again.
We'll throw that on the agenda.
But yes. Yeah, so real quick, we got 4 minutes. This is the book you need to get for First Step Act credits. Okay, mail it into your loved ones in the facility. It's available on Amazon. This is the book that you get that if you're pre-trial or you've just been arrested, or I got a call today. We're going to do a call a little bit later here. Somebody got a target letter for PPP fraud. They're going to go. They're going in 100%. They're going to have to cut a deal, whatever. They need this book because when they write the pre-sentence report, they want it written correctly so that they can maximize.
The first half of that book, the green book is actually divided into two sections. And yes, the first half just talks about custody classification. It explains the designation process. But it gets into each point on a custody classification. So for folks who are in prison, there is benefit to that. The second half is all about a better PSR. And that is really geared toward that pre-trial, pre-sentence phase for any attorneys that are online with us today. That is the ins and outs of how the Bureau reads the PSR.
Here's the new issue of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, the champion. And yes, there we are, right there on the blue book. And you know, such an honor that we that they see this as a resource that we can advertise a little bit in there to help everybody, families, attorneys, everybody, the end consumer, the inmate, help everybody understand what this is. Because as you know, it's complicated and it's like speaking.
Knowledge is power, let's face it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, awesome. Any real quick thoughts before we wrap up for today?
You know, I was thinking when you were introducing and talking about Carville, a lot of the Bureau facilities have some really interesting history of what they were before they were the Bureau of Prisons. And trivia, the Lake Placid Winter Olympics are now where they are located. Nope, you can't tell them. We'll have to wait till
next week. I know the answer.
I do too. But yes, the inmate housing at a certain institution was the Olympic Village at Lake Placid, at the Lake Placid Winter Olympics. Let's see if anybody else can put it in the comments section.
We'll give you an emoji or something like this. real quick for Carville, and then we'll get out. This was called the management by walking around.
Yeah.
And if you were doing something right, executive staff would give you one of these and you could redeem it for a shirt or something. Oh my God.
Back in the days.
They're like rats in a maze.
Trinkets.
Just treat me like a rat. Just feed me with positive reinforcement. What a country. Anyway, fun times. A little blast from the past there. Well, folks, it was a fantastic episode here today on Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block. We went around the block. I tell you what, with this heart out thing, good God.
Yeah.
You know, I need to take a nap. I tell you, just kidding. It was a lot of information. So come back next time.
You should have seen me doing the workout.
Yeah. And come back next time. We'll have another exciting show. We'll answer your questions as well. If you just post them in our Facebook group, Early Release, First Step Act, Early Release of Federal Prison, our YouTube channel is First Step Act. So if you have any questions, hit us up. You know, we'll answer them one way or another, either on the show or in a comment.
Absolutely.
With that, We'll bid everybody a great week. Stay safe. We'll see you here next time on Around the Block. Take care, everybody. See ya.
Bye-bye. Take care.
You're listening to Federal Prison Authority Presents Around the Block with Bruce Cameron and Susan Giddings, only on LA Talk Radio.